Hello, my name is Chip Lang. You are listening to Total EM. If you are lucky in some ways, I don't know, because hopefully you're listening to the podcast before then, but if maybe you fell behind a week because you're listening to something else, that's totally fine because now you can binge Sam Ireland. Sam is talking with us about both impending ventilatory failure, which was last week's podcast, and now acute ventilatory failure, which is this week's podcast. And I am so happy to have Sam on to talk about both. As a quick recap, Sam, can you give us a little introduction of yourself?
Yeah, so my name is Sam Ireland. I'm a critical care paramedic. And Tyler Christofoli and I run the Foam Frat podcast and blog along with Cynthia Griffin. And then we also do the Prolific Project, which I won't plug again since I did it last week, Chip.
Fair enough. But it is something to check out if you're the presenter type or want to be the presenter type. They have a very cool system in place. And maybe I should still listen in and chime in on this because it just sounds like a great process that you guys are doing. But basically, take a look at that. Take a look at all of Sam and Tyler's stuff on Foam Frat. It is definitely worth checking out. But this week, Sam decided to come on with us. I had to lure him with some beer at WIMSA, or at least I'm supposed to in November. Don't let me forget, Sam.
I will not let you forget.
But acute ventilatory failure. So we talked last week about impending ventilatory failure, and impending sounds like it should be worse, right? But almost a little bit of a misnomer because we think about it with other things as well. But if you don't know exactly what we're talking about, please go back and listen to the last podcast or re-listen to it anyway if you've had a little gap in between. But this week, we're going to talk about acute ventilatory failure and how that's different and how we manage it differently. So Sam, what is acute ventilatory failure?
So acute ventilatory failure is worse than the impending respiratory failure, and you might end up in this situation in a couple ways. These patients might present acutely, like they just show up either in your ER or you come upon them and they waited to call 911 a little bit, whatever your situation is. And so that's one way you can come across them. The other way is if you screwed up the first step. So when we were talking about the impending ventilatory failure and you didn't give them enough tidal volume, you didn't increase their delta enough. And, you know, now RT is calling you in the room saying that the patient is breathing super slow. And now you've got an awful minute volume. The respiratory rate sucks. And so does the tidal volume. So this one's definitely a little bit scarier.
Yeah, these are the patients that you don't tend to see a whole lot of, but when you do, it scares the shit out of you. It meets the LLS criteria. You're familiar with the LLS criteria, Sam?
What is that?
This is the looks like shit criteria.
yes, that is accurate.
So when they meet this criteria, it is usually something bad. And like you said, I mean, this is usually with the people who aren't fixing the delta pressure and stuff like that with the impending ventilatory failure. But also, I've seen the situations, like you said, this is kind of where you get into that crashing asthmatic or COPD or zone where, you know, you have something that was already going on underlying usually to help push them over the edge. And now because they haven't been treated or they've had a significant delay in their treatment, they look horrible. And these are the people you're like, they're going to die right now if I don't do something.
Yeah, totally. So when we talk about the acute ventilatory failure patient, they're still going to have that PaCO2, you know, above 50, or if you're looking at an end tidal CO2, if it is a COPD patient, probably just, you know, whatever you figure is well above their baseline, too much for them to handle. And then this is the part where they're in the uncompensated respiratory acidosis. And so if you did get ABG, VBG on whatever, their pH would probably be at least under 7.3 by this time. And the problem with the acute ventilatory failure is, yeah, you did recent, you know, before they went into this, they were in the impending part and they had a respiratory rate to work with. And all you had to do is put them on BiPAP. And, you know, before when the respiratory rate came down, that was a good thing because that meant that their, you know, chemoreceptor zones weren't being triggered to, you know, stimulate their diaphragm as much because, you know, now there's not as much CO2 going on. But this, when this patient slows down, the acute ventilatory failure patient, when their rate comes down, it's like, it's a bad thing. Like this means that they are acutely decompensating and they are not going to, their rate is not going to come back up. And when we think about putting them on BiPAP, or let's say this patient could already be on BiPAP. BiPAP in a traditional mode, you can't set a rate because of the nature of how it delivers breath. So normally the BiPAP machines will give something called a PSV, which is a pressure support breath. And it's exactly what it sounds like. It supports a breath with pressure, but that's the key word is support. So they have to have inspiratory demand. They have to be constantly creating a negative, relatively negative intrathoracic pressure. The vent pretty much has to believe that they are actively breathing in. And that allows them to be pretty comfortable in a normal circumstance because it'll adjust to their inspiratory flow so they can take the breath like nice and slow, or they can, you know, suck in the air really, really fast, and they can exhale for as long as they want. And that's why we don't worry about these patients generally if they're on regular BiPAP, like air trapping too much, because they can set their own inspiratory and expiratory time to whatever feels good to their body. But now that we don't have inspiratory demand and we don't really have much of a respiratory rate to deal with, the regular BiPAP is not usually going to work with these people. Like when you see an acute ventilatory failure patient, usually your first thought is not, oh man, we need to grab the BiPAP right now. It's usually, I need to grab a bag valve mask right now.
Great, great point. So before you discuss how you're going to manage these patients, kind of something I want to cheat and jump in here with is because you said to grab the bag valve mask. Some people are going to grab the laryngoscope. Why is that wrong?
Yeah. So if you're going to not breathe for these patients for a while, their oxygenation probably kind of sucks right now. And their end-tidal CO2, I mean, their PCO2, whichever, is probably pretty high. And then we already noted that they were in an acute respiratory acidosis uncompensated where it was already starting to affect their pH. And so if you are grabbing a laryngoscope for these patients before you're normalizing their end-tidal CO2 and their SpO2, that's like that's not good because that patient will most likely crump on you before you can ever get that tube in. This isn't one of those situations where, oh, let's see how fast we can get the tube in, and then we'll blow off all that CO2 and all, they didn't become too hypoxic. This is probably the patient that will code during your intubation because you're not managing their ventilatory or oxygenation status.
Which is why that resuscitate then intubate, like RTI or resuscitate before you intubate, whatever you want to call it, is such an important measure. Because, I mean, these patients ultimately may still end up needing that kind of support because they completely exhausted their own ability. But you have to do something before you just jump right in and try and tube someone. Am I getting that correct, Sam?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, you should have a good minute volume going with whatever means that you're doing. We'll talk about methods of delivering that minute volume in a second, but always, yeah, I'm a huge fan of apneic oxygenation as well. If you think about it, you know, these patients, they still have a hole, and this is like oversimplifying it, but they still have a hole from the outside of their body to their alveoli, and you have a mask that can go over their face. And so putting a piece of plastic from that hole to the trachea doesn't really do much for them. You can still bag them. You can still put, you know, certain modes of non-invasive on them. You can still apneic oxygenate them. It doesn't do anything for them having a piece of plastic right now. It does protect the airway, but that's not your main concern. You have to normalize the gases before you just jump in and decide to put a piece of plastic in.
So now that we got that part out of the way, for those who are going to be ambitious and try and tube them in, and given that sometimes there may be other reasons why you need to go that way, but the main thing is to resuscitate them as much as possible and stabilize them before you do those attempts, let's talk about why and how you're using the BVM.
Yeah, so I've had some difficulties in the past with these types of patients, and I've found that people really like to lay them flat when they grab the bag valve mask because that's just kind of how we practice. Like, we practice with a CE clamp, and it's really difficult and to do that with a patient that's sitting up. And so you kind of have to get creative. You may have a person like come up in front of them and hold like a two thumbs up technique from the front while somebody else bags. And so it can be done. It takes some coordination and practice. And I really love the way that like Rich Levitan does it. Ever since I heard about this, I've just been repeating it nonstop about the coffin position. about cannot oxygenate face flat in the neutral position. And so what that does is it gets rid of their reserve volume in their lungs. And so it basically shrinks their lungs and makes it harder for them to breathe. So if you are going to go with strictly a bag valve mask, you want to try to do it in the best sitting up position that you can. And like I said, that could take some practice. So there, you can use a bag valve mask. There's a couple of caveats to it, but we'll come back to the bag valve mask in a second because I want to talk about the vent first, because I think that's the first best option if it is available to you like right now. If it's not available to you right now, if it takes you time to set up, then you know, go with a bag valve mask with a peep valve. And we'll talk about that in a minute, but I'll talk about how you can use the bag valve mask to your, I mean, the ventilator to your advantage in one of these circumstances. So in those traditional BiPAP modes, those are not really going to help you a whole lot in this circumstance because what I mentioned earlier, that pressure support ventilation, they need to have, you know, they need to have a breath to support in the first place. And you also can't really set a respiratory rate. And so those are two reasons why just traditional BiPAP, not so much. It's not really going to help. But a lot of vents have what's called an NPPV or a non-invasive positive pressure ventilation mode. That's just called NPPV pressure. And all vents are different. They all have different names for these things. But the gist of the mode is that it's not a pressure support breath anymore like BiPAP gives. In these NPPV pressure modes, the breath that gets delivered, the vent just delivers up to a certain pressure. So for instance, like, let's say I have like 5 a peep and I set my inspiratory pressure to 15. That vent can have a rate set. And so you set the rate at whatever it might be, you know, 10, 12, 15, 20, whatever's right. And then it will ventilate that many times per minute up to that pressure, and usually a cumulative pressure, depending on if your vent is additive or absolute. So it'll ventilate up to 20 centimeters of water pressure, and it'll do that 20 times a minute. And so, you know, independent of whether they have respiratory effort or not. And so the great thing about the vent when it goes into these modes is it has high pressure oxygen tubing, and so it can deliver 100% oxygen. You can titrate your respiratory rate by watching the flow volume loops. You can watch the exhaled tidal volume and know exactly how much you're getting. And so there's a ton of great reasons to use these modes. This is what the Envy ventilator, because that's the one that I'm the most familiar with, if the ventilator senses that the patient has gone apneic for more than, I think it's 20 seconds, it will kick into this mode and it will basically bag them through the vent until they regain a spontaneous rate. At that time, it'll switch back into BiPAP, which is really great. But what people have gone to using this mode for is pre-oxygenating at a low pressure with 100% oxygen to denitrogenate. So there's some really great modes out there. If you're a kind of a vent nerd, you can use a few different modes to accomplish this. One would be that NPPV pressure. But if you also use like an assist control pressure mode, it's pretty much the exact same thing. Or you could, of course, use a SIMV pressure as well.
What about now, say I cannot set up the vent, or I don't have enough hands to do it, or they weren't already on the vent and I just found them like this. What's my other way of taking care of this patient?
Yeah, so this is grabbing that bag valve mask, because if you grab like CPAP or you grab BiPAP, if you can't set a rate, then that's really going to be no use to this patient. So you have to be able to grab a bag valve mask and manage this patient like that. So, you know, a few things, this is kind of like a buyer beware thing, because I'm probably going to talk about some off-label stuff here. I don't think it's that outrageous, but I guess you'll see what I'm talking about. So when you have a bag valve mask, I just did a vodcast on Foam Frat about the anatomy of a bag valve mask. Maybe it was like a month or two ago.
Which is really good, and I'm going to link that to the show notes because I really liked it.
Yeah, so that podcast kind of explains why it's hard to keep pressure inside of the mask of a BVM generated. Like, you can hold like an expiratory pressure with a peep valve, but keeping like a constant flow doesn't really work because excess pressure goes out the back of the BVM when it's not being squeezed. So what I would recommend doing is putting a nasal cannula on underneath the bag valve mask. And you can actually use, here's exactly how I would do this. Let's say I have a patient who is currently on CPAP or BiPAP. Now, all of a sudden, let's say that it's not a ventilator that can have a rate programmed in, or if it's this oxygen-driven CPAP, and I see that, oh, their rate, their tidal volume, it all sucks right now, so I have to start manually moving this air. And so what I would do is I would just put a nasal cannula on underneath the CPAP or BiPAP mask, and I would take off whatever is connected to the CPAP or BiPAP mask, and I would put my bag valve mask on the end of that with a PEEP valve. And so basically now what I've done is that nasal cannula providing constant flow and pressure underneath that mask will meet the resistance of the PEEP valve, and that will set my expiratory pressure. And so that, like, if you're talking about EPAP and IPAP, that would be my EPAP, whatever that PEEP valve is set to. And then whenever I squeeze that bag valve mask, that will create my inspiratory pressure. And then I can bag them without having to worry about holding a seal and without worrying about them de-recruiting because of absorptive atelectasis or just not enough pressure in the lungs.
I think that's a pretty clever way to do it. I haven't quite done it that way. I've done some stuff similar to it, but I like this way of doing it. Sounds like a good way to practice it at least.
Yeah, as long as they don't start barfing while they got the CPAP or BiPAP mask strapped to them, you're pretty good.
So what other tips do you have for this?
So we were talking a little bit before the podcast about this, and I was telling you that it depends how much the patient is with it. I was in the back of the ambulance, and this is a very just like my experience type of story, but and I did exactly this. The patient had an end-tidal nasal cannula on underneath the CPAP that we had them on. So we were monitoring their end-tidal CO2, and we had just turned off the nasal cannula once we put them on the CPAP. The end-tidal CO2 is just to monitor them, and then we were trying to manage their respiratory distress with the CPAP. That's all we had at the time, was just an oxygen-driven CPAP. And so we put them on that, and the patient was just not moving enough tidal volume, and the end-tidal CO2 was coming up. And I knew it must be high because generally those CPAPs will wash out the end-tidal CO2 a little bit. So I'm thinking, man, it's probably even higher than it's reading. We have to start bagging this patient. And so I'm going into the airway bag, and I'm grabbing the bag valve mask, and I start putting the mask on the end of it. And I think to myself, like, it's only two of us, like, it's going to be really hard to hold a seal on this patient. What if I just use the CPAP mask with the bag valve mask? And so I went ahead and I put it on there, and the patient was really hard to get in sync with their respiratory rate. And so the patient actually started grabbing at the bag valve mask. So I'm like, oh, great. Now we're going to end up doing like a delayed sequence intubation. This person's not being cooperative. The person just wanted me to bag at a certain rate and to with their inspiratory effort. And so what I did is I had the patient keep their hand on the bag valve mask because they could see what I was doing, and they understood right away, they weren't that confused yet, that when I squeezed the bag, they got, you know, tidal volume. And so I let them put a hand on the bag, and whenever they would start to squeeze it, I would squeeze the bag. And they were actually able to give me like an intrinsic respiratory rate and how they wanted to be bagged based on just like actually helping me squeeze the bag. And it actually worked very, very well. And so I don't know. I've always had this idea since then that maybe if you got the right patient, maybe they could just bag themselves.
To me, that's so interesting, though, because it almost seems like maybe this is, depending on how we define the impending ventilatory failure versus the acute ventilatory failure, that maybe this is on the spectrum still a fairly early acute ventilatory failure where they're able to at least maintain some respiratory rate, just not as good or ideal as we would like. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, this patient would start to, like when I would start, I don't know if the inspiratory flow surprised them or what, but as soon as I would start breathing in for them, they would start like coughing. And so it wasn't that the respiratory rate was like high, it was that they would like start to fight the bag valve mask because they weren't paying attention. So once they did start paying attention and actually got involved in the process, then it ended up going a lot more smooth. But yeah, if you had a patient that was like true, yeah, end, like acute ventilatory failure, they're not breathing at all, then that would be a good move, would be just to probably asynchronously bag them for the most part. And then when they do start to breathe, try to sync with them as much as you can.
Yeah, and that's something I noticed that I do quite often with patients is if I can, when no matter what mode we're doing, like no matter what's going on, if we're bagging, they're still spontaneously breathing to at least some degree, we're going to try and do the breaths with it. And patients tend to tolerate it better and tend to like it a lot better if you can bag with them versus just pushing, you know, at your set metronome rate, basically.
Yeah, and I recommend everybody go out if they have some training equipment or something, you know, grab one of your CPAP masks, see how the bag valve mask fits on there, because I think that's a really great combination. It's almost like using an anesthesia mask, and then put a nasal cannula on underneath it and put a PEEP valve on the BVM and just see how it works for you. If you can feel the pressure and feel the increased pressure from the bag valve mask and you squeeze, for any services that don't have immediate access to BiPAP out there, especially if you have a manometer on your bag valve mask, you can almost exactly simulate BiPAP with a bag valve mask, a PEEP valve, and a nasal cannula, and then a CPAP mask. So it's kind of piecing things together. I'm sure there's some off-label uses in there and stuff, but for if you don't have another option, that could be a viable option for you.
Which actually brings in nicely something that came up with a certain EMS agency that we have locally that really, it's the first time I realized this is a real issue, was that they only have a CPAP function, no BiPAP function, basically, and they're not able to really titrate the CPAP. So it's basically just set at one rate. It's like basically at 5. So for these types of agencies where this is all they have, I think we talked about how basically a lot of times you're probably going to actually have to be forced to do this approach that you're talking about with the BVM.
Yeah. And actually, I don't have any connections to the product or anything like that, but the CPAP masks that I'm most familiar with are from FlowSafe 2, and they actually just came out with a purely oxygen driven BiPAP as well. It's not called BiPAP. It's called like bi-level CPAP or something like that. And it's the first of its kind. I wish I would have actually thought of it sooner, because I was trying to think about how to engineer an oxygen driven BiPAP, and they figured it out before anybody else. So now for services that don't have ventilators, don't have BiPAP machines or anything like that, or even, you know, ERs that where like ventilators or BiPAP machines aren't readily available, you can use a purely oxygen driven one that actually just hooks up to a Christmas tree. And then you just flow pure oxygen through there, and you can adjust an IPAP and an EPAP. So that's pretty cool and a good option for services that, you know, don't have too many positive airway pressure options.
Nice. We'll try and link that in the show notes. Any other ideas or thoughts, Sam, that you want to add?
I think you've tapped me on the acute ventilatory failure for now.
Well, Sam, thanks so much for coming on. It was a pleasure to talk to you. Can you go ahead and provide us with the tagline, please?
Until next time, continue to provide total care everywhere.